Fascism, What It Is and How to Fight It, by Leon Trotsky. Bourgeoisie, Petty Bourgeoisie, and Proletariat. From The Only Road for Germany, written September 1932, published in the USA April 1933. Any serious analysis of the political situation must take as its point of departure the mutual relations among the three classes, the bourgeoisie, the petty bourgeoisie, including the peasantry, and the proletariat. The economically powerful big bourgeoisie, in itself, represents an infinitesimal minority of the nation. To enforce its domination, it must ensure a definite mutual relationship with the petty bourgeoisie, and through its mediation with the proletariat. To understand the dialectic of the relation among the three classes, we must differentiate three historical stages. At the dawn of capitalist development, when the bourgeoisie required revolutionary methods to solve its tasks, in the period of bloom and maturity of the capitalist regime, when the bourgeoisie endowed its domination with orderly, pacific, conservative, democratic forms. Finally, at the decline of capitalism, when the bourgeoisie is forced to resort to methods of civil war against the proletariat to protect its right of exploitation. The political programs characteristic of these three stages, Jacobinism, left wing of petty bourgeois forces in Great French Revolution, and most revolutionary phase led by Robespierre, reformist democracy, social democracy included, and fascism, are basically programs of petty bourgeois currents. This fact alone, more than anything else, shows of what tremendous, rather of what decisive importance, the self-determination of the petty bourgeois masses of the people is for the whole fate of bourgeois society. Nevertheless, the relationship between the bourgeoisie and its basic social support, the petty bourgeoisie, does not at all rest upon this reciprocal confidence and pacifist collaboration. In its mass, the petty bourgeoisie is an exploited and disenfranchised class. It regards the bourgeoisie with envy and often with hatred. The bourgeoisie, on the other hand, while utilizing the support of the petty bourgeoisie, distrusts the latter, for it very correctly fears its tendency to break down the barriers set up for it from above. While they were laying out and clearing the road for bourgeois development, the Jacobins engaged, at every step, in sharp clashes with the bourgeoisie. They served it in intransient struggle against it. After they had culminated their limited historical role, the Jacobins fell, for the domination of capital was predeterminated. For a whole series of stages, the bourgeoisie entrenched its power under the form of parliamentary democracy. Even then, not peacefully and not voluntarily. The bourgeoisie was mortally afraid of universal suffrage. But in the last instance, it succeeded, with the aid of a combination of violent measures and concessions, of privations and reforms, in subordinating within the framework of formal democracy, not only the petty bourgeoisie, but in considerable measure also the proletariat, by means of the new petty bourgeoisie, the labor aristocracy. In August 1914, the imperialist bourgeoisie was able, with the means of parliamentary democracy, to lead millions of workers and peasants into the war. Note, August 4th, 1914. Collapse of the Second International. The German Social Democratic Party representatives in the Reichstag voted for the war budget of the imperialist governments. On the same day, representatives of the French Socialist Party did likewise in the Chamber of Deputies. End note. But precisely with the war begins the distinct decline of capitalism, and, above all, of its democratic form of domination. It is now no longer a matter of new reforms and alms, but of cutting down and abolishing the old ones. Therewith, the bourgeoisie comes into conflict not only with the institutions of proletarian democracy, such as trade unions and political parties, but also with parliamentary democracy, within the framework of which arose the labor organizations. Therefore, the campaign against Marxism on the one hand, and against democratic parliamentarism on the other. But just as the summits of the liberal bourgeoisie in its time were unable, by their force alone, to get rid of feudalism, monarchy, and the church, so the magnates of finance capital are unable, by their force alone, to cope with the proletariat. They need the support of the petty bourgeoisie. For this purpose, it must be whipped up, put on its feet, mobilized, armed. But this method has its dangers. While it makes use of fascism, the bourgeoisie nevertheless fears it. Pilsudski was forced, in May 1926, to save bourgeois society by a coup d'état directed against the traditional parties of the Polish bourgeoisie. The matter went so far that the official leader of the Polish Communist Party, Warski, who came over from Rosa Luxemburg not to Lenin but to Stalin, took the coup d'état of Pilsudski to be the road of the revolutionary democratic dictatorship and called upon the workers to support Pilsudski. Note: Joseph Pilsudski, 1876 to 1935. Originally a socialist with nationalistic views, in 1920 he led the anti-Soviet forces in Poland. In 1926, he led a coup d'état and established a fascist dictatorship. Worski, friend of Rosa Luxemburg, he supported her differences with the Bolsheviks. When Comintern zigzagged to the left in its third period phase, Worski was demoted from leadership in the Polish Communist Party, but not expelled. He disappeared in the USSR during the Great Purge of 1936-38. Rosa Luxemburg, 1870-1919. Great revolutionary theoretician and leader. Originally active in a socialist movement of her native Poland, she later became a leader of the left wing of the German Social Democratic Party. She and Karl Liebknecht were imprisoned for opposing World War I. After their release, they led the Spartacus Bund, Spartacus League. Both were arrested and assassinated during the unsuccessful revolution of 1919. End note. At the session of the Polish Commission of the Executive Committee of the Communist International on July 2, 1926, the author of these lines said on the subject of the events in Poland, quote, "Taken as a whole, the Pilsudski overthrow is the petty bourgeois, plebeian manner of solving the burning problems of bourgeois society in its state of decomposition and decline. We have here already a direct resemblance to Italian fascism." These two currents indubitably possess common features. They recruit their shock troops first of all from the petty bourgeoisie. Pilsudski, as well as Mussolini, worked with extra-parliamentary means, with open violence, with the methods of civil war. Both were concerned not with the destruction, but with the preservation of bourgeois society. While they raised the petty bourgeoisie on its feet, they openly aligned themselves, after the seizure of power, with the big bourgeoisie. Involuntarily, a historical generalization comes up here, recalling the evaluation given by Marx of Jacobinism as the plebeian method of settling accounts with the feudal enemies of the bourgeoisie. That was in the period of the rise of the bourgeoisie. Now we must say, in the period of the decline of the bourgeois society, the bourgeoisie again needs the plebeian method of resolving its no longer progressive, but entirely reactionary tasks. In this sense, fascism is a caricature of Jacobinism. The bourgeoisie is incapable of maintaining itself in power by the means and methods of the parliamentary state created by itself. It needs fascism as a weapon of self-defense, at least in critical instances. Nevertheless, the bourgeoisie does not like the plebeian method of resolving its tasks. It was always hostile of Jacobinism, which cleared the road for the development of bourgeois society with its blood. The fascists are immeasurably closer to the decadent bourgeoisie than the Jacobins were to the rising bourgeoisie. Nevertheless, the sober bourgeoisie does not look very favorably even upon the fascist mode of resolving its tasks. For the concussions, although they are brought forth in the interests of bourgeois society, are linked up with dangers to it. Therefore, the opposition between fascism and the bourgeois parties. The big bourgeoisie likes fascism as little as a man with aching molars likes to have his teeth pulled. The sober circles of bourgeois society have followed with misgivings the work of the dentist Pilsudski. But in the last analysis, they have become reconciled to the inevitable, though with threats, with horse trades, and all sorts of bargaining. Thus, the petty bourgeoisie's idol of yesterday becomes transformed into the gendarme of capital. End quote. This attempt at marking out the historical place of fascism as the political reliever of the social democracy, there was counterposed the theory of social fascism. At first, it could appear as a pretentious, blustering, but harmless stupidity. Subsequent events have shown what a pernicious influence the Stalinist theory actually exercised on the entire development of the Communist International. Does it follow from the historical role of Jacobinism, of democracy, and of fascism, that the petty bourgeoisie is condemned to remain a tool in the hands of capital to the end of its days? If things were so, then the dictatorship of the proletariat would be impossible in a number of countries in which the petty bourgeoisie constitutes the majority of the nation. And more than that, it would be rendered extremely difficult in other countries in which the petty bourgeoisie represents an important minority. Fortunately, things are not so. The experience of the Paris Commune, the first dictatorship of the proletariat, March 18, 1871, first showed, at least within the limits of one city, just as the experience of the October Revolution, the Russian Revolution of 1917, has shown it after, on a much larger scale and over an incomparably longer period, that the alliance of the petty bourgeoisie and the big bourgeoisie is not indissoluble, since the petty bourgeoisie is incapable of an independent policy. That is also why the petty bourgeois democratic dictatorship is unrealizable. No other choice is left for it than that of between the bourgeoisie and the proletariat. In the epoch of the rise, the growth, and the bloom of capitalism, the petty bourgeoisie, despite acute outbreaks of discontent, generally marched obediently in the capitalist harness. Nor could it do anything else. But under the conditions of capitalist disintegration, and of the impasse in the economic situation, the petty bourgeoisie strives, seeks, attempts to tear itself loose from the fetters of the old masters and the rulers of society. It is quite capable of linking up its fates with that of the proletariat. For that, only one thing is needed. The petty bourgeoisie must acquire faith in the ability of the proletariat to lead society onto a new road. The proletariat can inspire this faith only by its strength, by the firmness of its actions, by a skillful offensive against the enemy, by the success of its revolutionary policy. But woe if the Revolutionary Party does not measure up to the height of the situation. The daily struggle of the proletariat sharpens the instability of bourgeois society. The strikes and the political disturbances aggravated the economic situation of the country. The petty bourgeoisie could reconcile itself temporarily to the growing privations, if it arrived by experience at the conviction that the proletariat is in a position to lead it onto a new road. But if the Revolutionary Party, in spite of a class struggle becoming incessantly more accentuated, proves time and time again to be incapable of uniting the working class about it, if it vacillates, becomes confused, contradicts itself, then the petty bourgeoisie loses patience and begins to look upon the revolutionary workers as those responsible for its own misery. All the bourgeois parties, including the social democracy, turns its thoughts in this very direction. When the social crisis takes on an intolerable acuteness, a particular party appears on the scene with the direct aim of agitating the petty bourgeoisie to a white heat and of directing its hatred and its despair against the proletariat. In Germany, this historical function is fulfilled by National Socialism, Nazism, a broad current whose ideology is composed of all the putrid vapors of disintegrating bourgeois society. End of section.